Vous êtes à l'écoute de
Mosaic.
Hey everybody, I'm Ana Gonzalez.
And my name is Alex Nunes. And this is Mosaic, a new podcast from the Publix Radio.
Mosaic is a collection of stories about American immigration, told from a region of the country where much of it began.
Today, the story of Omar Ba.
So I just felt, you know, I'm trapped. There's no escape out of here anymore. I gave up, literally gave up in life. I decided, well, that's it for me. Within a short moment, I will be a dead person.
Omar was a journalist in the Gambia who had to flee his own country because the government wanted to kill him.
And we'll tell you all about that. But first, let's talk a little bit more about Mosaic.
So if you want to start an argument, start talking to someone about immigration. It's a tough topic.
It's really tough. Don't bring it up at Thanksgiving with your Uncle Jim. It will not end well. But in its essence, immigration is really about people and their stories.
And for us, living in New England, we have this unique perspective because our immigration history goes back to the 17th century.
So we're really able to see the entire American timeline of immigration through the individual stories from this region.
Our first story begins in 2000, when Omar Ba started his career in journalism.
I became a journalist due to the fact that there was extreme poverty in conjunction with oppression in Gambia. People were sick and poor and hopeless, and at the same time being oppressed due to the dictatorship. So I wanted to speak out. I wanted to have a voice, but also at the same time give them a voice.
So you got into journalism and you did what you just said you wanted to do,
yep.
And that got you in trouble. Can you explain sort of what you were writing about and then also what the consequences were for you?
I wanted to have an opportunity to sit with people in power, especially those in government, to ask them questions that people would not ask them and things that would make them uncomfortable so that they can start to pay attention to what they were doing. My column was called Bantaba in the local language in Gambia. It means the village meeting place.
I thought you were going to say it was called In the Hot Seat.
In the hot seat, right? So, but the hope was, you know, in the village meeting place, that's justice, that's where disputes are settled, but that's where everybody's also held accountable. But it's also an opportunity for communication and unity and upward movement.
Omar was writing for the Daily Observer, the largest paper in Gambia at the time. And it was obvious from the start that the president and the people in his government were not going to like Omar's column.
President Yahya Jammeh was a brutal strongman who ruled the country for most of the last two decades. Human Rights Watch publicly condemned Jammeh's government for arbitrary arrests, unlawfully killing and detaining people, and forced disappearances. So Gambians were understandably terrified of Jammeh.
Eventually, well, I knew what would happen. 2.5 years down the line, the government didn't like it, which I understood. I knew it was going to happen. I received a lot of threats during that column. Attempts to stop what I was writing. Some people, after interviewing them, before I get to the office, they'll drive to my office and speak with the editor to ask the editor not to publish what I was doing. It was really very discomforting for a lot of people.
Things escalate one day. Omar's newspaper gets a tip that a secret trial is taking place at a military barracks. Someone has been accused of plotting to overthrow the government, and he's being secretly put on trial.
So this guy was shot. Luckily, he survived because some of his colleagues were killed. When he healed, they took him to a secret trial at a military barracks, and the public didn't know about that. I got a tip-off because I was also known for being a court reporter. When they told us, I told my editor I would go. If I don't cover it and the public doesn't know, first, it will not be a fair trial. And two, they will just end up killing this guy too. I didn't actually think it would be like extreme. The worst I thought would be when I go to the gates of the barracks, they'll just kick me and send me home.
It's actually much worse than Omar expected. When he gets to the military barracks in the town of Yundum, he presents his press ID to the head guard. The man begins to question Omar, and then he tells the other soldiers to attack him.
He just told his people to pounce on me. They started beating me, at some point I lost consciousness. And when I regained consciousness, you know, I would see them, they would lift me up and hit me with gunpowder and
just throw you in the air and then yeah, and hit you on the way down.
And it hit me on the way down. So it was like a game to them. It was a lot of them. At some point, I saw so much blood. And later, I realized that, you know, I was stabbed with bayonets. I wouldn't even feel, didn't know what was physical pain or not, because I was just not too conscious. So they took me to a small cell behind a big office building. And the cell, I don't think was even designed for to be a cell. It was just like a small closet where I couldn't stretch my legs. I literally had to coil and sit. There were shovels and big forks that are like the size of a shovel that people use.
Like a pitchfork?
Yes.
Yeah.
They had those in the closet. I was really scared because I thought I was going to die and then they will use those stuff to dig and bury me. Luckily for me, I was released.
The attack leaves Omar seriously wounded, with injuries over virtually all of his body. He has stab wounds on his back and a deep bayonet gash on his left hand. His face is swollen and bruised. The soldiers, he says, were beating to kill. After he's freed, Omar thinks getting medical treatment will expose him to the government again. So despite his injuries, he goes home.
After a month, Omar has recovered enough to go back to work and continue writing. But things change at his paper. A new pro-government editor is hired, and he begins censoring Omar's work. So Omar decides to go around his editor and publish his work on an online news site called Freedom Newspaper that's being run by a Gambian exile in the U.S. Omar knows this is risky, and he has to be very careful.
Things were getting worse in the country. There were more killings. Even journalists were getting shot and killed. You either stop writing, or if you write what the president doesn't want, you are arrested or killed, or you disappear. So you have to write under a pseudonym or just without a byline and just publish. But I just couldn't see corruption or anything without writing it, or people being tortured or illegally arrested. So I started reporting for that newspaper. And at some point, it was hacked.
Like the email or the website?
The emails and the website. And they found that I was actually the one writing all those stuff. And then there was a national manhunt when they got those emails.
Omar is scared for his life, and he's also completely stuck. He's in a cyber cafe when he finds out about the manhunt, and he just freezes. Eventually, he comes to the conclusion that the only way to survive is to flee the country. So on May 29th, 2006, Omar sets out to escape Gambia.
I just had to go. I couldn't do anything with my family. I couldn't call them, because if the government saw that I called them, they would put all of them in trouble. And I was married for just 2 months, and I couldn't talk to my wife. So I decided to leave.
This reminds me of a theme I think we've seen come up a lot in our reporting of this podcast series. People, for whatever reason, find themselves in these situations where they have to make these huge life decisions in a split second. And it could be a refugee in 2019, or it could be an English family back in the 17th century.
Definitely. In this case, Omar wakes up that morning and everything's cool. He just got married a few months ago and he's got this life he's establishing for himself. And then, by the end of the day, he comes to the decision he has no choice but to flee his country. He has to leave it all behind, even his wife of 2 months, for a journey that will be complicated and dangerous.
Gambia, if you're familiar with the geography, it's just a river, a long river, and on either side of the river is small strips of land, and that's the country. So I had to go to the northern part of the country, meaning I had to cross the river through a ferry, and before getting to the ferry, I had to cross a bridge. It was just a long journey of a lot of barriers and obstacles.
The whole time, are you looking out for people, you know, looking for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I had to just be extra careful.
To get to that ferry, Omar buys himself a bus ticket and goes and sits at the very back. The driver starts off, but when he gets to the bridge Omar was talking about, traffic is at a standstill. There's a checkpoint, and armed soldiers are searching cars.
I was so terrified. I was so scared. I immediately opened the window. I wanted to jump and just run into the thickness of the forest. But we were very close to the bridge, and when I opened the door, I saw that there were soldiers, armed soldiers, you know, patrolling around and standing. So I just felt, you know, I'm trapped. There's no escape out of here anymore. I literally gave up in life. I decided, well, that's it for me. Within a short moment, I will be a dead person. I closed my eyes. I was just reminiscing my life for the short life that I had lived. I was 26 years old then. And I was just thinking about the good things that have happened to me, the bad, but just appreciating life.
A soldier bangs his gun butt on the side of Omar's bus and gets on. He tells the passengers he's looking for someone, and he needs everyone to take out their IDs so he can check them.
When he said that, I said, wow, so this is exactly real. This is not something else. They're looking for me. They're literally, it's me. And I couldn't even believe it's me they're looking for. I just stood up and raised my hands. I just wanted it to end, let it be done. So I closed my eyes and waiting for a bullet to come. And there was silence. This is still like a miracle to me. I could feel that the light from his flashlight is not pointing at my face any longer. Then when I looked at the soldier standing outside, he was literally shaking. I looked at him again, just more closely, and realized it's somebody that I know. We knew each other 10 years earlier in middle school, and he was actually part of a group campaigning for me to be the student president. And it was like a shock to him.
The soldier waves the bus on. He lets Omar go.
Everybody was calling me Dom, son, or my child. Like they were older women. Dom, what happened? Dom, what happened? What is going on? What did you do? Then I told them, just pray for me. That's all I said. I couldn't talk. I told them, I don't even have the energy to say anything. I'm just a dead man. Just pray for me.
Omar makes it into Senegal that night. He contacts human rights activists and goes into hiding. But he quickly finds out that he can't stay in the country for very long.
I was in Senegal, hiding in somebody's home who was among the human rights activists helping me. They tuned on TV and I saw myself being declared a wanted person. That was really one of the scariest moments of my life. I said, wow, I've escaped, but he's still looking for me. Warning the general public not to help me. If anybody helps Omar Ba, you are going to be in trouble. Anybody who has information where he is, reported to the authorities. Because of that, a lot of arrangements were made to quickly move me out of Senegal because, you know, there was no guarantee that I would not be killed in Senegal too. Within a month, I was moved out of Senegal and taken to Ghana. Actually, I remember when I was going to the airport in Senegal to go to Ghana, 7 people were around, like surrounded me, like went with me just to make sure that there's nothing happening. Then I was taken to Ghana.
Within a year of arriving at a refugee camp in Ghana, Omar is accepted to be resettled into the U.S. Shortly before he leaves, he asks his caseworker where he's going, and the guy tells him Providence, Rhode Island.
I said, what do you mean Rhode Island? Is it an island? The guy just started laughing at me. So he just told me to follow him. He showed me a big map of the US on a wall. And he touched, this is Rhode Island right here. He tapped on the state. And the first thing I noticed was when I looked at the state, I said, it's very small. All right, I'm from the smallest country in Africa and I'm going to the smallest state in America. I said, that sounds good.
Big things come in small packages.
I think so. I agree. So Rhode Island tells me that.
the next episode of Mosaic, we follow Omar Ba through his new life in the United States. The challenge of navigating a new place, finding work, and starting over. That's in the second episode of Mosaic, a podcast about immigration from the Publix Radio.
Mosaic is a production of the Publix Radio. We had help from James Baumgartner, Aaron Selbig, and Kylie Cooper. Our original music is by Bryn Bliska. Our editor is Sally Isley. Tori Malatia is the general manager of the Publix Radio. I'm Alex Nunes.
And I'm Anna Gonzalez, and thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast comes from Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security at carnegie.org.